Lizzie Borden, the most famous female axe murderer of all time. It was a gruesome scene. Andrew Borden had been bludgeoned 11 times with a hatchet. Abby Borden was found lying face down in a pool of blood. Just pulled into the infamous Lizzie Borden murder house, a feeding ground for dark energy. We know why we're here. There is something that doesn't want to be interfered with. It's time we sift through the legend and get to the heart of the story. It's go time.
Can I skin my hands?
A seance opens a door to the other side. But when you give that kind of permission, anything can walk through. Anything.
I think Lizzie's present, but she's waiting.
She is. She's watching.
Can you knock the table if that's you? Are you hearing that?
Yeah.
Something knocking on the underside of the table. I don't like this.
Okay.
I don't have control of my arm. I don't like this at all.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me today, we have Sam Beltrusis and Chris Fleming joining me to discuss the brand new Discovery Plus program, The Curse of Lizzie Borden. And this was a brand new shock doc. I was asked to be a part of this program earlier this year. It was, actually late part of last year. They had this concept of us going to the Lizzie Borden house to investigate. And to be honest with you, it had been 10 years since I had been to the Lizzie Borden house. And my last visit, although was remarkable, also left an indelible mark on me. It was one of the more unnerving circumstances I've ever been in. When I came to that event, it was Jeff Belanger and I had come to do a paranormal investigation with some followers and listeners of our shows. And we set up to have this great weekend. And it was the weekend that Hurricane Sandy hit the East Coast. So on Sunday, when all of our listeners got to go home, I was stuck at the Lizzie Borden house for five more days. A few of those days, I was all alone. It was really uncanny. I remember growing up, I watched that Lizzie Borden movie starring Elizabeth Montgomery, who I had the biggest crush on. I mean, God, you know, Samantha, who wouldn't be in love with Bewitched, right? I wanted to go visit that house. I always thought it would be remarkable. Well, you got to be careful what you wish for, because sometimes the universe hears you and what you put out in intention manifests itself. And I got to stay at the Lizzie Borden house. I couldn't leave the Lizzie Borden house. And I had some really strange events unravel, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. That's one thing that we tease in the documentary, the Shock Doc. Chris Fleming and I both visited, but at different times, and both had very impactful moments. But we never talk about it. You never hear what we had happen. Really, I think there's a quick flash for Chris, and they play an EVP he captured or a DVP direct voice phenomena, but we never get into it. So we're going to cover that tonight. But when I was asked to do this, they said, well, we'd like you to go with a medium. And, you know, obviously, Cindy Kaza, you work with on Holzer Files. Should we get her in on this? And then they checked and they're like, oh, she's actually filming a few other shock docs with Steve Shippey. So I figured, well, if that cheating whore is going to do other documentaries without me, then I'm going to bring in the second best looking medium in the entire universe. And he's one of my best friends. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Fleming. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Dave. How you doing? Thanks for having me, buddy.
I'm doing well. It was great to get this opportunity. You know, you and I have known each other going on almost 17 years now. Right. And we've done Ghost Adventures Live, their Halloween specials twice, but have never appeared on scene together. We did Paranormal Challenge, where you were a guest judge, but we never got to investigate together. And when they asked me if I had a medium in mind, I immediately said Chris Fleming. And they wanted to involve you in this. Do you remember getting that first phone call? Not from me, but from the network asking if you'd like to be a part of this?
Yeah. Wasn't it like within like a week before you guys were filming?
It might have been. It might have been. You
called me too, you know, after I talked to them and, you know, we both said it would be great to work together on something like this because we've investigated before a lot of your events and stuff like that. So it was a chance for us to put our heads together. I said, well, I'm there, buddy. If you want me there, I'm there. So I'm so glad that I came.
I am too. And we're going to get into it in a few minutes. I want to hear some of your experiences when you had visited the Lizzie Borden house prior. Yeah. But what was a great surprise to us, you know, obviously I was introduced to this woman, Luann, and she had been getting really compelling EVP from the Lizzie Borden house for a long time. And it was really good. As a matter of fact, I'm really bummed that they didn't play more of her independent EVP because she had some other really creepy things. Now, I understand we have the constraints of a TV show. You've only got so much time you can fill.
Right.
And, you know, just reviewing EVPs may not be as compelling, especially when it wasn't part of our investigation.
Right.
So they had Luann hooked up with me to do this. You were going to be the medium to come in. And then they said, oh, by the way, we're going to have a talking head segment. We're going to have a guest come on. He's only going to be with you guys for one segment to talk about his connection to the Borden family and tell you a little bit about the story and history as he knows it and some of the paranormal activity he's dealt with. And we're like, oh, that'd be fantastic. There's somebody actually related to the Borden family. We get to have him on the show. They're like, yeah. So they bring this guy in. He knocks you and I out with what he was doing in that first visit.
Right.
And I remember I turned when we were done with the scene, I turned to the director and our producer, Kay and Mary, and I said, we got to keep him on the show. Oh my God, this guy's a goldmine. He has such a great connection. He's empathic. He channels. Chris is a great medium. He loves the tech. So between what he can bring and what Sam can bring with this connection, we've got our trigger object. And I remember they said, well, I don't know what his schedule's like. We're going to have to ask him. And then they went over and talked. And and then joining our little trio, it became a, what's the word? When you have a quad, four of you, there's a quadruplets. I don't know. Suddenly we had a new friend to investigate with. Ladies and gentlemen, let me bring him into the stream as well. Sam Beltrusis. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, fellas. How are you?
Doing good, buddy. Thanks for joining us. Now, when you came in with the expectations of just talking to us about the murder, giving us some insights into the Borden family. When we asked you to stay on, were you a little surprised by that?
I was, but I also think that this was a calling for me, guys. So it was like I was called into this. And even the call, because I got a call about a week beforehand as well. And they're like, hey, we want you to be a part of this case. I'm like, well, I'm working on another project. I can't, you know, commit too much time. And they're like, well, they just told me like the direction of what they were looking for. They wanted it to be something completely different, not the typical Lizzie Borden show. And then when I came on set, it just was like magic when I was in the room with you guys and the spirits were desperate to communicate.
Well, it was really amazing the way when you came in and started to tap into what's going on there. Obviously Chris was there as a medium to try to understand what's going on, but you had that missing piece of the puzzle for us. Now, I talked about it at the beginning of the show, and I want to warn people that are listening at home to the podcast or watching us here as we're doing this episode. I am in a hotel in an undisclosed location because I'm filming a new TV series, and I have this time to do this. But there are people walking through the hallways. There are the maids and matrons, whatever they're called, that are cleaning the rooms and vacuuming. And so if you start hearing weird shit, it's not ghosts. I promise, folks. It's simply workers or drunk people in the hallways of the hotel that I'm in. So I just want to put that up front so I don't get a bunch of email later. Oh, my God, when Sam was saying that, I heard this demonic growl. No, it was just a vacuum cleaner out in the hallway. But I was mentioning I went to the Lizzie Borden house 10 years ago. I got stuck there because of Hurricane Sandy, and that sounds horrible. I was very happy to be there, but it was really creepy. I remember sleeping in the room where Abigail Borden had been murdered. And at one point, I woke up, and my arm is dangling off the bed on the side where her body was. I'm a full-grown male adult, And I couldn't have pulled my hand back under that cover any quicker. Like, I guess that, you know, 200 thread count sheet is going to keep me protected from whatever evil might be living under the bed or the icy cold grasp of Abigail Borden's death hand reaching up for me. But it was really weird. You just get this vibe when you're in the house. And I actually, during my stay, a group showed up, and Leanne Wilbur, who is one of the former co-owners of the Lizzie Borden house. And if you watch through the entire episode, we do dedicate this shock doc to her. She passed away just days after the sale went through of the Lizzie Borden house. She'll be missed, but she was so sweet. And people showed up and she's like, Dave, my employees aren't here. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have nobody to take them on the tours or ghost hunts. And I said, well, you know the history. You tell them the history. I'll lead the ghost hunts. And this is when I was on Paranormal Challenge, so at least I was recognizable to the people. And you know, so we did these ghost hunts, and we were getting the weirdest things through spirit boxes. We could hear voices screaming. You could hear them calling out. At one point, I had the spirit box on the floor in Abigail Borden's murder room, and I put the recorder down, and I asked, can you tell me, you know, what your name is? And I get this very clear, you hear this very proper name go, Abigail Borden.
Wow.
And it was so, it just blew all of us away. It was so clear that it came through. We were getting knocks when we were sitting in that parlor where Andrew Borden had been murdered. We could hear pounding on the floor beneath us. That was really creepy. So you're hearing DVP, which is direct voice phenomena. I could hear voices from time to time inside the house when we were the only people there. And when I was alone, things would happen. Leanne Wilbur would tell me, and she used to have, and I kicked myself for not following up with her. She had recordings, guys. I don't know if you know this. The house would call her when there was nobody there. So she had her voicemail system set up, and the phone would start ringing in her house. She stayed in the apartment above the gift shop in the back, and her phone would start ringing from inside the house, and there was nobody there. And she would get these long, quiet, sometimes whispery conversations. It was really, really freaky. Chris, when you went there, what was the, you know, were you there for the purpose of a TV show? Were you there investigation?
We did Psychic Kids. We had the kids come in there, and I didn't even know where I was because we were not told anything, and I didn't want to be told either. But when we went up to the second floor, all of a sudden we smelt this horrific, like, death, decay, rotted flesh, we were all gagging. We raced out of the room, and then I went back in. I said, okay, what is this from? Can you please tell me? And all of a sudden I started getting this major chest pain. I thought I was having a heart attack. And I turned to the cameraman. I said, don't let the kids see me. And I raced into the bathroom and I collapsed. And he says, should I call 911? And I'm grabbing my chest going, I can't believe this. And then all of a sudden I was hearing all these voices in my head. And I realized, oh my God, I think it's something in the house that's doing this to me. So I raced outside and I was just in tears because the pain was severe. What I found out later was, at the time I thought, okay, someone got hit in the chest, stabbed or shot in the chest. Wasn't the case. Find out when we look at medically, when the head is bludgeoned, when the brain is bludgeoned, the heart is still pumping blood to the brain. And since the brain is not receiving it and then relocating the blood, the heart goes into cardiac arrest.
Wow.
So what I had felt was that place memory was there, which is something I always did in Dead Famous. And I do when I go to ghost hunts, I will pick up on how people died, but I tend to feel it. And I realized, oh my God, this is the Borden house. That made sense. So for me, that was very, very traumatic to experience what they felt physically as they were dying. But then the second thing was, when we were done filming, crew left. I said, I had my own little rental car. I said, I want to hang out and I want to try to communicate with Andrew about what happened to him. So I'm filming and, you know, did you do it? And you hear, you know, it wasn't me. And there's an extension of that clip where I turn to where it came from. I go, you didn't do it. You didn't do it. And you hear this no from the woman. They didn't use that part. So for me, it was like, I've got Lizzie Borden telling me she didn't do it. So I've always had that for the last 10 years, and I've always wanted to go back to confront that even further. And that's why I was glad to be there.
Well, we're going to, I'm going to take you to task in a little bit, Chris Fleming. And I want to talk to you about that place memory and reliving horrific things, because obviously I did something that I'd never done before in this episode, and it left me really unnerved. Still does. Rewatching it, it's really uncomfortable for me. And while filming the new series I'm on, I just had something very traumatic happen to me. And I reach Sam, I reach out to Chris about it. He's like, oh yeah, I guess I should have told you that can happen to you now. So we'll get into that in a little bit. Again, information that would have been helpful before I had it happen, but we'll talk about that. Sam, you've been to the Lizzie Borden house a ton of times and have come in, but you only recently, like, I mean, you haven't known your whole life that you were actually related to the Borden family, correct?
Yeah. So the connection to the Borden house goes back many years. I mean, I was a journalist for many years. So the first article I wrote for Newsweek that was on the bed and breakfast of the Borden murders. So I've always been, I guess, fascinated, but also kind of a little terrified by the case. And having, you know, gone to the house multiple times, it took me years to actually go and spend the night at that house. So I was scared of the house because I had recurring nightmares about the murders that played over and over again. And then fast forward to about 2 years ago, my mother, who had been doing our genealogy, said, Sam, you know, we're related to the Putnam family, who were the major accusers during the Salem witch trials, which blew me away because I basically focused on the Salem witch trials. I've written two books on the Salem witch trials. So it was mind-boggling that someone who gave tours in Salem was related to the bad guy. And she's like, there's something else, but I'm going to save it for you. And I'm like, okay, Mom. And then about a year later, when she felt like I was ready to kind of take the news, because she knows I'm super sensitive, and she's like, we're also related to the Borden family, not once, but twice. And I started crying because it was sort of the idea that my life makes sense. You know, it's like all the stuff that I've been through and all the experiences that I've had at that house and other places, it all makes sense. And, you know, it's weird, Dave, every time I've been on Darkness Radio, we somehow always talk about the Borden house, and that happened multiple times. And I found that kind of like, I felt it was like we were being prepped for something. And I definitely felt like when I was at that house for this, the Curse of Lizzie Borden shock doc, that it was meant to be, and we were all being prepped for this show.
Yeah, I got to say this too, is after what was happening in the one room with Sam, I had gone up to Kay and I said, Kay, you know, I think he's supposed to be here, because sometimes the universe brings us all together for a reason we don't fully understand yet. And she's like, I think so too. So that was just something I wanted to mention, because I found it was when we were all at that seance table, you know, all of us were meant to be there, and we could clearly feel that.
Agreed. And you know, here I'm be completely honest with you, and Chris knows this about me. I even mentions it in the show. Listen, I'm a skeptical believer, and when it comes to people being mediumistic, and I think you guys being sensitive can admit to this. Yeah. Everybody is suddenly mediumistic. Everybody has abilities, and I know it's, everybody says we all have this innate ability. You know, it's just working that muscle. But, you know, when I hear claims, and here comes this guy, and he's related to the Borden family, and he's going to sit on the couch, and all of a sudden, I'm overwhelmed, and I need, you know, my internal skepticism kicks in, and I'm like, okay, what do we got going here? You know, and I'm listening, and I'm watching this. Now, I love these moments because they're great clarification moments for me. And unfortunately, this is one of those double-edged swords. The clarification moment was amazing, but tragic at the same time. When we were filming this episode and Sam had come in, he was sitting in that spot talking and going through what he was going through. And we had this very intense connection with Eliza, right? The cousin that was next door was a great aunt. I can't remember.
It was a great aunt. So it was 40 years before the murders in 1892. This woman, Eliza Borden, was part of a heinous situation.
Right, where she murdered two of her children and then slit her own throat.
Yeah.
She drowned them in the well. Horrific story. We hear this and Sam connects with this. Now, again, I don't know who I'm dealing with here in the fact of his abilities. I've never really been around Sam to have him display this. And I'm watching, and you know, we're filming a TV show. So I certainly have no way to call him out because I don't know if what he's seeing is real or not. And then we get done with this. It's very intense. And then Chris gets overwhelmed and he's like, guys, I just got to get out of here. I got to go clear my head. Mm-hmm. And this was the aha moment for me about Sam Beltrusis, folks. You know, we all have those moments when it just clicks and you realize that what you're dealing with and the person you're dealing with is on. Chris walks out and Sam goes, there's a very strong presence here, very strong presence with Chris. I feel it's a male, like a father figure. Reggie, does that name make sense? And I'm thinking, well, Reggie Fleming, right? Chris Fleming's dad, famous NHL player. Chris talks about him all the time on social media. This isn't a real surprise, whatever. Yeah, Sam. Yeah, you're right. It's his dad. And I'm just, whatever. I'll play KQ. Let's just move on. Because this has, I know this isn't going to be in the episode, so it doesn't matter. So we sit there and we listen to this. And then as this episode progressed and we're getting deeper into the weirdness and just how dark this story really is, the next day, Chris receives a phone call and I come walking in and I'm, you know, trying to be upbeat. And I go over and I'm like, hey, buddy, what's going on? And he tells me what happened. And what was interesting to me was when you said his father is here, but not for Chris. He's here to support Chris because Chris has another family member in medical crisis.
Yeah.
And then to have Chris tell me that, you know, when I ask him, what's going on, buddy, you all right? He says, well, I just got a call from my sister. My mom collapsed yesterday in the garage of her home and has been there alone this whole time. Chris, did you ever find out, was it around the time that Sam picked up on your dad's spirit there? That is that around the time your mom collapsed in the garage?
It was around the time that, from what we gather, it was like the day before or whatever. It was when I had walked out of the house, when I just felt I couldn't breathe.
And here you have this. Yeah. You have this spirit of your father who tells Sam, I'm here for Chris, but it's because there's a medical emergency in another part of the family.
Yeah.
And again, this meant nothing to me until that next day. Yeah. And this holy shit bomb gets dropped on me.
Right.
And, you know, I talked to Chris and I said, you know, Chris, sometimes picking at the evil things, you know, do you think there's any chance that this might have affected your mom? And when you said, yeah, I said, well, do you think we should mention this to the director? Do you think, you know, this is, you know, because obviously we were all, it was just like we all got hit in the face with a plank of wood.
Yeah.
And you were kind enough to share that because I wanted people to realize that there are inherent dangers to doing what we do. It's not all just going in and glitz and glamour of ghost hunting and getting to go sign autographs somewhere later. Sometimes there's repercussions to the actions we take. So your mom collapsed. You were willing to talk about it on camera. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would. I mean, now you've had time to reflect on this.
Yeah, what happened was there's a pet sitter that comes to clean the cat's boxes. And luckily, she came earlier that day and found my mom actually in the kitchen, unconscious. And she tried to revive her. And my mom was out of it. She said she was like completely delirious, talking about the past, present, future, just saying stuff that didn't make sense. So they took her to the hospital. They don't know why she collapsed. She was severely dehydrated. She may have been there for a day, but it's good that they found her. She was in the hospital for 2 months, almost 2 months in a care center for 2 months. And she had actually broken her knee from the fall. So, you know, and she's never really fully recovered from that knee. She went back in the hospital for a blood clot actually 2 weeks ago, severe blood clot. So that has caused, you know, lasting effects. For something like that, it is something that when my stepdad was alive, my mom, what they would see these black masses, they would see stuff. And my mom had an incident 4 years ago where something was trying to attach itself to her. But the crazy thing too, is which wasn't on there. I also got a phone call from my girlfriend at the time, had a horrific nightmare that night that someone came into the house with this big like hatchet or knife, was chasing after her daughter. She's trying to save her daughter and it killed a cat. So I told her, I said, oh my God, they're coming after you in the dreams too. They came after my mom. And I had this horrific nightmare and this blackness that was covering me when I was in the hotel room the first night when I was trying to take a nap. So it's like, you know, it's definitely, there's something trying to keep us away. So I realized when you turned to me, you said, you know, do you want to go back home? I said, no, that's what they want. They want me to go back to try to protect everybody. So I'm not here. I have to stay.
Yeah, I give you a lot of credit for that because that was a tough decision to make. And I applaud the fact that you wanted to stand up to whatever was here and what was going on with your family. Obviously, it became a very emotional moment because we had talked about Eliza and the drowning of the children and the fact that those spirits were still there. That overwhelmed me as a father of course. And then as we're talking about this and you share that element of your story, and I, you know, to the credit of the production and director, they allowed us to have that human moment, which I really appreciated. It was, you know, it's tough to watch that scene again. And I don't think there's any one of us here or from anybody I've read the amazing comments online about the show. I don't think there's anybody that had a dry eye in that moment. It really affected us. And we had to break up for about an hour, hour and a half for everybody to kind of collect ourselves. And then we got back together to decide if we were going to move forward with this investigation. There was something your mother had said as well, Chris, and I don't think they ended up touching on it in the episode, but wasn't she saying something and we ended up having like a connection to that during the episode? Because she was, like you said, she was kind of talking about the past, present, future.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember. I know she was saying something that it was kind of relevant to what we had.
It was like, the man is upstairs. Who's the man upstairs? It was something like that. And here we're communicating with this darker male presence upstairs in the Lizzie Borden house. It was just weird.
Oh, she was saying something like, it's not what you think. It's not what you think.
Oh, that's what it was, right?
It's something, it's hiding in the shadows. I'm like, what are you talking about, Mom? You know? And it was creepy. It was just creepy.
Have you talked to your mom since then? Does she remember having like almost like a spiritual connection?
She doesn't remember anything. No. She told me she doesn't know what happened. All she remembers is being, you know, woken up by the sitter, and next thing you know, she's in the hospital. She has no memory of it.
Terrifying. Well, Sam, just in case anybody watching this right now or listening to this podcast do not know about the Lizzie Borden murders, can you just give us a nutshell version of the story and kind of let people know what happened?
Yeah, so in 1892, it was August 4th, Lizzie Borden's stepmother, Abby Borden, and it's not, by the way, it's not Abigail, it's Abby, but Abby Borden and Andrew Borden were found bludgeoned to death. So the way that the crimes were, so it was actually a hatchet, and the hatchet was a severe murder. So it was like a crime of passion, 11 times for the father, and Abby was almost like 19 times. So I think that the actual recreations of the murders were actually fairly accurate, even down to the dress that Lizzie Borden was wearing during when the murders happened. The only two people that were in the house were Lizzie Borden and also Bridget Sullivan, the maid. Bridget was upstairs in the third floor, and Lizzie Borden was claimed to have been out in the barn eating pears when the murders happened. And to kind of give you an idea, so Abby was on the second floor in the John Morris room, and she was found on the floor. And then, of course, the couch, not the same couch that I was on, but the couch that was there in 1892, that's where Andrew Borden was found murdered. And if you see the crime scene photos, oh my gosh, it was definitely an overkill. The part that people kind of get caught up in.
Can I mention one thing, Sam? I do want to bring this point up because you mentioned the couch is not the original, but it is a very close replica to the original couch. And I know that the few detractor comments I saw were, oh yeah, Sam's picking up. He's so empathetic and he's picking up on it. It's not even the real couch. Something I want everyone to realize, that wood beneath that couch is still blood soaked. As a matter of fact, I think it might have been Ghost Adventures or Ghost Hunters, one of those shows, where they went down with luminol, sprayed the wood, and lit it up like a Christmas tree. You could see the blood. So, folks, just because it's not the actual couch, the spot where blood poured is still there. And why is that important? And, guys, I'll throw this to you. I'd love your thoughts on this. My friend, Sergeant Paul Dosti, who's been on our show in the past, is a cadaver dog specialist. His cadaver dog, who has passed away since, Buster, was one of the top cadaver dogs in the world. This dog could find bodies that had been buried even a couple hundred years ago. There's nothing left. That has to leave you with the idea of what energy is left behind. Where does the soul reside? Maybe we're looking for one place that it's outside of us. Maybe it's part of every aspect of who we are. So this blood puddle that's soaked and drenched that area. First of all, you've got the psychic scarring of a brutal murder. Then you've got the blood still soaked into those floorboards. You've got this wound, this fracture in time and space that exists there. So somebody who's open to it is a relative. and is empathetic sits in that exact spot, of course they're going to be overwhelmed by what took place there. And even if you say, well, maybe it's your imagination, maybe, but maybe that's what opens you up to tap you into something like that. And that, you know, when you focus and you're hyper-focused and aware of something, that doesn't discount the ability. And this is coming from a skeptic. That just means that may be helping to open you up because you're already in the mindset of what took place there. So Sam, I just wanted to stand up for you in that fact that there's every reason. But guys, when a dog can find blood trails outside where it has rained and snowed for 100 years and it can still follow, that tells you that there is an energy left behind by the human being and that even animals can pick that up. So
the thing is, scientifically, you know, parapsychologist William Roll had coined the term place memory. And place memory is a past event, trauma, death, whatever it might be, can be recorded in inanimate objects. Some of the most, you know, absorbent tend to be obviously stone and wood, natural elements, but steel can also contain those emotions and that trauma. So what Dave has been saying is that even though the couch isn't there, where Sam's foot is, where our feet are, right underneath that wood, that is the original floor that has absorbed that trauma, but also absorbed the actual blood from that murder.
Horrific. So I just wanted to cover that. Thank you for backing up on that. Now, Sam, so this murder takes place, two brutal murders, two viable suspects. You've got the Bridget, the maid. You've got Lizzie, the daughter. Obviously, Emma was considered at one point, but she was far away. John Morse, the uncle, was considered. And I don't think they briefly touch on it, but they don't give any background to it. John Morse, the uncle, was a butcher.
Yeah.
He had been staying there, and he was relieved of suspicion because of his very detailed and, in my opinion, overly detailed account of where he was. He knew the badge number of the cop he stopped and talked to. He knew the number of the bus that drove by. He knew every aspect of that as though he was trying to distance himself from that crime as far as he could. So where do you believe in the fact of John Morse being a viable suspect because of how detailed he was? Do you think he was at least aware of this murder?
Well, he's definitely should be. We should consider him a suspect, and he was considered a suspect. Yeah, his alibi was very like every step that he took that morning was like, I went here and then I went to talk to this person and then I talked to that person and I went to the cousin's house down the street. It was almost like he knew that he had to have an alibi. Now, the thing with John actually normally stayed on the third floor when he visited the family, and he was staying on the second floor in what is called the John Morse room where Abby was murdered. He stayed in that room, but also after the murders, he spent the night in the same room. To me, that's suspicious. You sleep in the room where someone was murdered, and you can have a good night's sleep in that room. Like, why wouldn't you move to another room or to stay with another family member? But he actually slept in that room the night of the murders. And, you know, also, too, like, it was suspicious why he was there. He would visit periodically, but he just kind of showed up, and they welcomed him into the house. And it was almost like it was unexpected that he shouldn't have been there. And he also shouldn't have been on the second floor. So I think John Moore should still be a suspect. We do know that he has an alibi, but we also think, I mean, the alibi is fishy, and we should, as people who focus on this case, really consider him as a viable option when it comes to the perpetrator.
So this murder takes place. We've referred to it, and I hate to keep giving any kind of notice to him, but it was the OJ trial of its time. It was a spectacle. It captured the attention of the world because it was so heinous in nature. This unravels. Lizzie is eventually, she could hire the dream team. She had the best of the best. They get her off. She's acquitted of this crime. She moves from that house, buys another house a mile across town. She calls Maplecroft, and that is where she lives out the remainder of her days. To me, that was always very telling and ballsy. Man, you talk about a woman ahead of her time. If you're an innocent and you're just going to, even innocent or guilty, the last place I want to stay is in the town where most of the people there believe I'm guilty of murdering my own family. But she was defiant, man. She dug her heels in. And it also tells me something, and I think all three of us can really feel for this, is this woman makes a shit ton of money from this murder.
Yeah.
And she spends a lot of it helping people. She helps
animals too.
Animals and people. And she, it showed a completely different caring side, which again, I guess if you're looking to cover your tracks would be a really good thing to do, but it just didn't seem like she was covering. I don't know. Even after this, like I said, at the end of the episode, I'm not here to put a button on this and say this is who committed this murder. And I don't think really that who did it is as important as the fact that it happened and that there are tortured souls. And if Lizzie Borden is innocent of this crime, to have your name dragged through the mud for 140 years right. and to, you know, be considered the suspect, that's got to be tragic. And this woman, folks, you remember that cute little rhyme, Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, gave her father 41. That didn't happen in the 1970s when I was a kid and heard that song. That song was circulating at the time of the murder. Wow. Kids were outside doing hopscotch in front of the Maplecroft singing that song out loud. Could you imagine the torture of hearing a song about you mocking you the whole time? You know, so there were many victims of these crimes. But Sam, we have to go to break in a minute, but I just want to point out something. I hope you don't mind me saying this. Talk about tragedy in a family. So you're related to the Borden family, which means you're related to Eliza next door, who murdered her children and took her own life. You're related to Elizabeth Borden, who reportedly murdered her father and stepmother. You're also related to another very tragic soul in history with Marilyn Monroe and another murderer with Eileen Wuornos.
Yep.
At what point do you think, holy shit, I should not be trusted alone? Because I would worry that bloodline's coming through my family.
Well, the joke was like, because you were like, well, Sam, I don't know if you should stay the night in the bed and breakfast because, well, those are your history.
Yeah.
But I do. I think that if you look at, I believe in the family curse. And I feel like what we did and what we're doing is undoing all the hurt and all the pain. I know from my personal experience, I had an attachment that nearly killed me. So I know that I am predisposed to having, being taken over by a dark force. And I also, I mean, not to say because I am DNA, Lizzie was, and so everybody else, but I will say that if you look at our lineage, it's stained with blood. I mean, we have, not only do we have Eliza, but we have Sarah Maria Cornell, who was featured in the show as well. We have Eileen Wuornos. We have Marilyn Monroe. We have the biggest case involves Thomas Cornell supposedly murdering his mother, Rebecca Briggs Cornell. And they have a child. And this is how I'm connected to Lizzie Borden, is her mother, Sarah Earle, had a child named Innocent. And they called her Innocent because her father was innocent. He did not kill his mother, and he was hanged in the 1600s. So there's more. And I think that we need to look at these cases and revisit these cases and at least get some answers and some postmortem peace for the spirits that are still lingering.
I completely agree. It's, but I'm going to be honest with you, Sam. I'm going to have to take some convincing to go to another site of a serial killer with you, knowing how open your bloodline is to murder and mayhem. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. We've got Chris Fleming, Sam Beltrusis, our guests today, as we discover and talk deeper about the curse of Lizzie Borden. Hello, welcome back to the program. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. This is Darkness Radio. I'd like all of you to keep Timmy D in your thoughts and prayers. He's going through some health issues. That's all I want to say at this point. He will be editing this, so when you're listening to the podcast, he has put the music in, the commercials in, and everything. He is just back and currently in the hospital being taken care of. I just want to keep in our thoughts and prayers, keep sending out some positive energy to him. And if you could, I'd appreciate that. Hey, folks, I have some cool news coming up as well. Listen, last week on social media, I released a Ireland trip. That's right, a trip to Ireland. You get to go with me, and we're going to investigate. I think there's three ghost hunts involved in this. We're going to be visiting famous castles and haunted hotels and cemeteries. It's an amazing trip. It's our fastest selling trip. We were sold out in 30 hours. The complete trip sold out, 30 people. So a lot of you, our faithful listeners, never even got a chance to hear this because it was only one social media post, totally sold out. So I've got a second trip. This is just between you and me, so don't tell anybody else. This trip is taking place in June of 2022. And if you want to be a part of the Ireland trip with me, then all you need to do is email me. I'll send you, I'll connect you with Maria, the coordinator for these trips. She will get you the link, and there's a payment plan set up to make it affordable and easy for you to sign on and be a part of this. This will be taking place in June of 2022. It is for the first 30 people. We already started talking about this on Wednesday's show, yesterday's show, and we've already got about 10 people signed up. So there's only about 20 spots that remain. If you would like to be a part of this trip, you can come along with us. Just so you know, so we're totally upfront with you. There is, I think, breakfast is included on the trip each day, and then there'll be one group dinner. The rest you're on your own for. And you need to take care of your own airfare. But the price of admission will get you into the ghost hunts, get you the tour bus, the tour guides, get us access into all of the different amazing places we're going to go. It's a fantastic trip. I'm excited to go back out and do this. I'm going to be doing three trips next year. Scotland sold out in September. Ireland sold out in October. We've added the second Ireland trip in June. This, I'm confident, is going to be sold out just through word of mouth on the radio show very quickly. So if you'd like to be a part of that, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. Maria will reach back out to you and show you how to sign up for this. And I hope to see you in Ireland. Now we're here. We're talking about The Curse of Lizzie Borden. The Curse of Lizzie Borden is a shock doc that is taking place on Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK. On that shock doc, you will see two delightful friends of mine, longtime friend Chris Fleming, the psychic medium, and a more recent but new beautiful friend, Sam Beltrusis, as well. All of us working on other projects in the paranormal field. So we had a chance, guys, not only to investigate the house, but we went to the woods where John Morris had lived at one point to investigate. Now, I want to be transparent to our audience. There are a lot of things that don't make the final cut because we can't definitively put our finger on what happened. We saw what happened in the documentary, and I'll have Chris and Sam talk about that. And then I'm going to talk about something that I captured on film that did not air. And I'm still very bothered by this, but I want to talk to you guys as we're out there. We're obviously hearing things moving around in the woods around us. We capture what appear to be two eyes, two glowing eyes. Now, again, we're in the woods. It's no stretch that this could be an animal, but we heard no noise. Just the eyes were there and then they weren't. You guys are doing spirit box sessions. We're doing EVP sessions. I want to know what was going through your head when you ask, who is that? What is that above us? And then you hear the word Satan.
Well, the thing is we knew that there were spirits around us when Sam and I walked in. We felt eyes watching us. Now, we were there also to communicate with elementals, which I saw a will-o-wisp, a sprite fly by, which was the first time I've ever seen anything like that, plus got EVPs that said there were elemental sprites there.
Oh, come on, Chris. A sprite. It's the woods. Everyone knows it's a firefly.
Well, folks, it could have been a 7-Up.
It was the woods in February with snow on the ground and ice cold. There's no flipping fireflies out there. So I just
exactly.
Oh, come on, Chris Fleming.
Exactly. It was pretty freaking amazing. And Sam was there. Was like, it tells me it's a will-o-wisp. So I was blown away by that. But we had other type of entities that were coming forward, and a lot of negative entities started coming forward. So they're saying, you know, Satan's above us, which, you know, I didn't believe Satan was hovering above us, but there these negative entities were trying to, you know, scare us.
Well, I wanted to tell you guys, and this is something I don't think any of you got a chance to see, but when you were over doing that independent box session and you asked what's above us and you hear Satan, I was filming because I could hear something moving around. And I said, I need you to manifest. I need you to show yourself.
No.
Over the top of the camera, You see this cloud of smoke come over. It forms, spins around for a few seconds, and blows away.
Well, I saw that. It's on the footage.
I didn't see
that. In the documentary. Yeah, it's in the documentary. Real quickly, when we're in the forest, and you turn, you see this mist come down and just shoots out like for like 2-3 seconds. And I wish
they would see that. Yeah, they didn't make it stand out, so I didn't even notice it. But what they had told me was, Dave, it's cold outside. Dave, oh, come on, Dave, it's cold outside. Your breath is the smoke in the air. I don't know why suddenly I'm Paul Lynde when I'm getting all hysterical about it. But
you do a game show?
Yeah, so, but it wasn't. I want you guys to watch every scene of us in the woods. Right. Never once do you see a puff of cloud come out in front of our mouths. Not once. And as you say, what's hovering above us? And I ask, I need you to manifest. This thing comes down over the top of me and swirls around and takes off. Right. That was crazy, but they didn't highlight it enough. And that's unfortunate because sometimes production gets these things and these elements and they don't know what to make of what it is. So they don't want to make us look foolish. They don't want, and they, instead of picking up the phone and going, hey, there's this brief moment when smoke appears when you ask for it.
Right.
Is that breath? They just kind of put it in there. Yeah. We'll put it in there, but we won't necessarily highlight it. But yet they'll show poor Luann bend over and an orb fly out of her ass.
Right.
So, talk about bad timing. I got to tell you, that felt like an SNL sketch. If you guys watched Saturday Night Live when they made it, Hugh Laurie was the guest host, and this was probably a decade ago. They did a Most Haunted riff, and he was playing Derek Acora, and at one point they're filming him with a thermal camera, and he farts, and you see the puff of smoke, and the guy plays back the EVP, and you hear, and they goes, it said Roger. That's what it made me laugh when it was such poor timing that it just happened to be when Luann bent over, that spirit light kind of shot up the wall, like, and it looks like it came flying out of her ass, but that isn't the case. Maybe it was. I don't know. I can't. Maybe she was a portal to the other side. But that wasn't that smoke that came over. Nobody had breath showing up in that cold
atmosphere. You could clearly see it in all the footage.
So anyway, you go back in. We're picking up this stuff. You get Satan. Do you think that was just a way to try to intimidate us, throwing out a big name like that?
Absolutely, because during the spirit box, they were talking about angels, and which people don't know is Sam and I and everybody. I said create a triangle, is we did prayers for the dead to have some of the spirits cross over, and it was talking about angels, the lights, Jesus, you know, God, and stuff like that. So that's a whole nother thing that went on before we left. It's something that I like to do when I go to a place. Any spirits that don't want to be there, help them leave. So we did a session of that. So what happens is you're going to have negative stuff, but like Sam had said, there's probably was rituals there at one point, and that residue and those entities through the portals or whatever Dominion, you know, could still be there.
Well, Sam, talk to us about that area, because people don't realize it's not just Eliza and Lizzie Borden's house there, the woods, all that surrounding area. There was it King Philip's War?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was murders, and they continue. Still, there's horrific things that happen. It's like that area demands blood sacrifice. And I don't mean it to sound so dramatic, but God, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, there was the satanic panic. I mean, there were satanic rituals in those woods that we were at. And I don't want to get the exact location because it's residential, but it's outside of an area that has a history of murders, and I didn't know where we were going, Dave. I didn't know that like what the location was, but looking back and finding the location, I'm like, wait a minute, there's something going on here. And we picked it up. I wanted to point out when Satan came on the spirit box, I looked up, I saw a serpent swirling around the tree, and I'm clairvoyant, so I'm going to see stuff that other people don't see, but it was trying to scare the hell out of us. And I was scared, but I was also, I knew that I was with people. We were there for a reason. We were there to basically work together and hopefully, you know, use what we learned, because we were crossing spirits out in those woods, and that wasn't really in the show. But Chris was leading us in sort of a group with me, Luann, and Chris, and we crossed over spirits, and it went from a very negative, you know, like Satan and the devil, to my dad coming through the spirit box, like, chill out, son. And I heard that, and it made me, you know, emotional. And then we had angels come through. So it went from evil to angels during prayer. And it shows to me that the prayers for the dead actually works.
Right. And that was a wonderful experience. And the thing is, you know, you know, 10 years ago, I started learning about this, the prayers and stuff, after when I came back from my near-death experience, and I realized that, okay, this is now my purpose. I have to do this. And I can't just do it alone, you know, and there's other people out there that do this. But it was like this time, like, now I know why Sam's here, you know, not just for this, but he's going to learn something here that he can now go do and continue to help these souls and spirits. So for me, it was like, all right, let's spread the knowledge, you know, and keep doing this good work. So I'm just grateful to be able to be there and, you know, give that to everybody.
Hey, folks, I'm going to be at the New Jersey Para Unity Expo September 24th and 25th, and I'll be talking about Lizzie Borden and many of the other cases that I've been a part of. So if you want to come on out, you can get tickets at NewJerseyParaUnityExpo.com. That's NewJerseyParaUnityExpo.com. Holy shit, Dave, that's a lot to remember. Well, I made it easier for you. Just go to DarknessEvents.com, DarknessEvents.com, scroll down and click on the banner. You can go find a way to buy tickets. I think it's $20. That's all, to come on out and see me at the New Jersey Paracon, and we'll talk more about this case. I will say this, man. There were a few things, of course, we can always bitch and whine about production, leaving out the ghosty mists or EVPs. Or
the EVPs that we got at the house, and the cameras going dead, all of them going dead.
Right, and that's what I wanted to discuss, is there were some elements, but again, I don't think they always understand the deep importance of what that means. And when we first got there to the location and we started filming, and it was Luann and I, as we're filming, and I'm being introduced to her, and kind of we're talking about her experiences in the house. The reason that you don't see most of that footage is all of our cameras kept shutting down. Mm-hmm. These were independent cameras, not cabled together, not into one power source. They're independent cameras. And our director, Mary, had said, I want this a run and gun documentary, down and dirty. So if anything happens, I want to talk about it. So we sat there talking, and this camera guy, this was one of their first, I think the first paranormal show they had filmed. Mm-hmm. And this guy had 20 years of experience working cameras. He looked me in the eyes and he said, this makes no logical sense. Right. And he said, and then here's the other weird thing. In the corner of every room, we've got GoPro cameras, and I've got a special extended life battery on each one of them. They each keep powering off after 20 to 30 minutes. So they were doing battery checks constantly. When they left us for the main investigation, we had a shit ton of equipment. Well, why don't we see that shit ton of equipment during the investigation? Because none of it would work. Everything turned off. Chris and I had brought our own video cameras from home. We had those charged up.
320 minutes total time.
We had our own cameras charged up. We're like, screw it. We have our own cameras. We break them out. We'd get 15 minutes of footage, and the cameras would collapse and just boom, shut down.
Mine did it in like 2-3 minutes, dead. And I was so angry because now I had no camera. And now we were down to one camera for the investigation.
And we were there alone. There's nobody else in that house but Luann, Chris, and myself. That's it. So we're screwed. We don't have any way to get cameras back up and running. Our equipment shot. We're just going off of whatever we can capture on the one camera and on my EVP recorder and Chris's recorder. So it was really kind of powerful. So there's little moments, but I don't begrudge them, because there was a big story to tell. And it's, when you're watching a 2-hour documentary with commercials, it pares down to about an hour 32. And if it was a full 2 hours, I think they could have fit it all in. But, you know, if you watch Discovery Plus, you can get it with commercials. So it would have been a 2-hour shock doc. Without commercials, it's an hour, I think, 32.
So there are many series.
Right. There were elements that were left out of this, I wanted to point out. But one thing I was extremely proud of is the fact that the one thing I think all of us can say about being on paranormal TV is, why don't you guys ever try to cross the ghosts over? Why don't you help? And we do, but they don't show it, because usually when you get into the context of religion, it can piss people off, and they want to be very careful about who we're praying to, how we're praying, what we're doing, because they don't want to offend the audience on the whole. So most shows won't show those moments, but I can promise you, all of us and most of the shows you watch out there care about the spirits. And when we leave, almost all of us do something as a closing prayer to try to help the spirits that are lost. So you got to see it not once, but twice on the series. And I was extremely happy that we got to do that. There was also when Sam did the channeling in the living room and he hit up with Eliza and the children, to close that out, I did another prayer at that point too. So I think I'm not upset that they didn't show it, because you didn't need to see a prayer every segment, but I was really pleased that they showed what they did in the series. And that gave you guys a better idea of, this is really what happens when we're at a location and ceremonial, you know, we're trying to shut things down. So we have these impactful moments, and then we get to do a seance in Lizzie Borden's room. And again, I'm not sure how this is going to go. I want to address this because we talk about all things that are left off. People are pointing out left and right, Dave, look, at 1 hour and 32 minutes into the episode, this happens. And especially during the seance, they're noticing things. Well, you have to remember, we did have like four camera people, and they were standing in door frames and, you know, kind of in the darkness filming us. So some of the things you see in the background are the production and camera, and they have to be as silent and quiet as they can to film. So they're not interrupting what we're trying to do. So it could be that camera guys and production are moving around in the background, and that's what you're capturing.
Yeah, we don't know.
It's hard to tell. There are a few other elements that have been interesting. Somebody saw at one point something that looked like a dog-like creature appear at a window and move away. I haven't had a chance to review that yet. There was one scene when I was downstairs and Chris and Luann were upstairs and we're talking, and you see this spirit light anomaly appear to shoot past me. I didn't notice that until we watched the episode. I definitively can't say yes or no, or was it a bug? It was February. It was freezing out. There were no insects. It was moving much too quick to be a piece of dust particle. We didn't have the air on, so there was nothing blowing like that. So I can't definitively say yes, that was a ghost or a spirit, but I also can tell you I don't believe it was a bug, and I don't believe it was dust, because you didn't see any other particulates moving around in the air. It was just one shooting through. So those were some of the different aspects. But now let's talk about the seance. I think what impacted me the most was the fact, as soon as we gathered hands and we were sitting there, and I'm really bummed that they didn't mic the table better, but what freaked me out was that underneath the table,
yeah,
you could hear something like it was going underneath the table, knocking around underneath it, each one of us. And I got to be honest with you guys, and I don't know why this, but I'm going to be honest, that scared the shit out of me. I didn't even want to continue, because I was like, I don't really understand a seance. I understand the principle behind it, and it's the intention and everything. And I was, you know, kind of trying to figure out, but we're all sitting there. This table's very low. We have no room to move our feet or our knees, because it would have shown on camera. You would have seen the table bouncing if somebody was tapping it with their legs. There was nothing like that going on. But to hear that, and as it's like,
right,
just screwing with us underneath the table, that was really unnerving to me. And after all the things I've seen and experienced, you think, well, why was that so scary? And I think it was just because that I did not expect that at all. And to have that suddenly appear was really, really unsettling for me. And then as it progressed, to see everything that unfolded. So talk us through a seance.
Real quickly is, you know, cause I knew that that was the imps, which, because there's infestation in that home, they're going to come through first and try to just intimidate us, pretend to be ghosts, stuff like that. So I turned and said, "There's just the imps. Just ignore them. Ignore them. They're trying to distract us because we want to connect with the human souls that are here." So, you know, I'm used to that.
And you don't, now you, through this special.
Luckily, nobody got scratched, you know, right, the three scratches that they do with their three fingers. So nobody got scratched.
Now, folks, sometimes you don't hear some of the things like imps. The other thing, which we talked a lot about, remember, that was blood-soaked area. There's also elemental creatures called puckwudgies.
Yeah.
And I think the reason nobody refers to them in the show is because the name is so ridiculous, right?
Right.
If they were razor teeth or, you know, the darklings, it would have made the episode. But something called a puckwudgie just sounds like a fat little, you know, hamster, you know, something you wouldn't
kind of is.
Right. But they're known to possess, and they're known to influence. Yeah. And we had a big discussion as, could the puckwudgies be something that infected people in that area and caused them to do dark things? But again, I think networks hearing a name like puckwudgie, that just doesn't sound sound scary enough, right? So let's just leave that alone, and we'll talk about dark energy. Makes a lot more sense to put it across. Because let's face it, in all honesty, if we would have been talking about the puckwudgies, many people that had no clue what that was would have thought, A, we made it up, or B, that we must be high, because nothing is called a puckwudgie.
Or you're standing at the wrong place at a hockey game.
Right, exactly.
Or as I watched your father do in many fights on the NHL ice, giving somebody a puck wedgie. That's a different thing altogether.
Right.
But so you believed it was the imps and things moving about.
Absolutely.
So we make connection in there, and it didn't just start immediately. The knocking did, but then they edit down to give you the highlights from that that experience, because we were there probably about an hour, almost 90 minutes doing that seance.
People don't realize moments. Too is, I'm holding Dave's hand, my left hand, and all of a sudden the hand starts shaking, and Dave's like, "Are you okay, buddy?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, your hand's shaking." I said, "No, that's your hand, Dave."
Yeah. I thought you were jiggling my hand legitimately. I thought you were like trying to get my attention. So I think there's even a picture. Let me see if I don't know if I've got that one on here. I don't think I do. But there's a picture where you see everybody else's closed eyes and looking down, and you see me going, where I'm looking up over the top of my glasses, because I thought you were trying to alert me to something in the room because my hand starts shaking.
Right.
That was a very disturbing moment, because obviously working with Cindy Kaza, she does automatic writing. She's always in control, and she'll write at blinding speeds, and you could see stuff coming out. I've never had that happen. I went in open, and when I said, and I set that intention before going in, I want to open myself, my mind, my body to this experience. I meant so that I could fully be in it as opposed to just witnessing. I had no idea that that was going to happen. And my wrist, my arm, and my shoulder hurt for about 3 days after that, because I was fighting it so much. I wish I had given into it, but I don't. Because and people are asking, like, I get this question constantly, so I just took one version of the question to address. Dave, just finished watching the Lizzie Borden doc. I'm convinced that you are absolutely fearless, or just crazy, a little bit of both. I do want to know if you had or have any lasting effects from that seance. To have something come through you when you're not expecting it is really unnatural feeling. Imagine that all of a sudden this isn't your arm, but it's still connected to you. That's how it felt, like somebody else's arm was attached to me, and I couldn't control what was going on. That was unnerving. I'm glad that you were there for me. But now, you'd seen this before. You'd seen people have something like this come through. How does a spirit do that and only control one limb?
Well, it's just basically focusing on it. I mean, like, your soul possesses your body, and the other soul comes in and kind of absorbs, removes some of your energy of that control. Remember, the brain's electrochemical response, and our muscles and everything are electrochemical. So you've got that electrical impulses that go through our arms to make our hands and our fingers move. So what they use is their energy just to come in and control that. There will be some type of slight conscious effort if you do a full channeling session. But sometimes they will just take over a certain body part, and they will use that. In this case, I had already stated to the director and the producer, which I did not tell any of you guys, that I was going to ask them to come through somebody at the table to choose who they wanted to go through the table to automatic writing. Because they asked if I wanted to channel. I says, no, I want to prove to you what I do. So I said to Kay, I said, that I'm going to see if it goes through Dave or Luann, because Sam already channels. I'm going to see if it'll go through them. So that's why I had the paper there. So when that happened, it wasn't a surprise to me, because I already discussed that telepathically to the spirits that were there. But I told verbally, and they said, should we tell Dave? I said, no, do not tell anyone else. Just watch what happens. So when it happened, it wasn't a surprise to me. What was a surprise was it started happening both at the same time with both you and Luann.
Yeah.
So I focused on you first, and then I moved over to Luann.
Well, thank you for that, because that legitimately scared me.
That's why I kept telling you, trust me, Dave. I have been through this so many times.
It wasn't you didn't trust. It was, I was afraid of, it's kind of, I equate it to that first time you stand on the tip of the diving board and you look down and you're like, I got to jump, but this is terrifying. I was already there. I was committed into it, but you just, it's getting that nerve to just make that, okay, let this happen. And I couldn't do it. I was fighting that so hard.
I understand. I mean, Dave, I've done this numerous times. I've done this with exorcists, with priests. I've done this with psychotherapists, where someone that has attachment, where I will have the spirit come through. I will have it look at me, and I will communicate with it. So for me, this is just normal. But for you, it wasn't. So I was just like, please trust me. I need to do this. We need to do this. And of course, it writes no more lies, and it starts writing other stuff. and Lizzie was speaking through the automatic writing through you. But then this dark entity tried to come in to remove her, starts twisting your arm because it doesn't want this message coming through because it's trying to hide in the shadows. It wants everybody to believe that Lizzie did it.
That's what I said. When you're watching that, all of a sudden something felt totally off and different. It felt
switched.
Like,
it shifted. Yeah.
That's why I said this right now does not feel like a woman. This feels like something else. And it was so, and that's when it started lifting me up. And I remember that moment and I thought something was lifting me from under my armpit. In the show, you just see me kind of lifting up a little bit, but I felt like I was, you know, almost at a full standing position. Right. It was so fucking scary.
You know, when you take it, someone's arm, you put it behind their back like the police do when they arrest them or whatever. And then it's like a domination type thing. Like I can now control you. That's what was happening with your arm. It started going back to try to get you behind you so that it's going to force you to do whatever it wants.
And just to validate everything that you just said, I mean, while you were going through this, Dave, I was feeling your energy and I was picking it up. So when you were contorting, I was contorting with you and I was like feeling the pain in the back. It was horrible. It was a horrible feeling. But I was also really proud of you for, you know, for going there and allowing yourself to be open to experience what we experience on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's why I thought I think it's a funny scene for myself when you guys are like, okay, or let's reset. We got to go back in. Everybody hold hands. And I just start praying and you're like, give me your hand. And I wouldn't turn. I was like, I didn't know if I wanted to go back into that circle. I was just like, whoa, God.
I was afraid you were going to quit. And I didn't want you to,
because I was close.
This is what I wanted. And it was happening. And then the pen broke and I'm like, give me another pen. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You know? So, everybody's rushing around to find another pen. And then the dark thing, there was like two things. There was a man. And then this dark thing that started coming through Luann. And that was one of the fallen. And that was the thing that I wanted to talk to. That was the thing that I wanted to remove from that place. And then together we started doing prayers to remove that. Because it had to be removed. It could no longer be there. This place needed to heal. It needed to release the shackles on these spirits that were still there. And it was like keeping them there in this cycle of fear and terror and trauma. That needed to be removed.
Agreed. It was a very powerful moment for all of us. You know, bonded us in an interesting way. I don't know that I'm in any hurry to have that happen to me again. Although I will say this, I can't give any details yet. I am out filming a new series. Cindy Kaza and myself, along with a couple other team members, and we're filming in one area, primarily looking into a bunch of different things that are taking place. And I had a very traumatic experience two nights ago that dropped me to my knees. I thought I was dying. I literally thought, oh shit, this is it. I'm having, you know, here I come, Elizabeth. This is the big one, right? I'm having a Fred Sanford moment and I hit the knees. I thought I was having a heart attack. I was brought in to the hospital and that's all I can say about that. Nothing physiological, thankfully, happened. It was terrifying. And then I contact Chris Sam and I'm like, I sent him a picture. He's like, oh my God, are you okay? Is it your heart? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. As a matter of fact, the doctor said for my age and weight, they were kind of impressed that I'm in as good of health as I am. There was no problems. I didn't have a stroke. I didn't have a heart attack. I didn't, but it was very scary. And then Chris goes, oh yeah, I meant to tell you after we did that. Now that you're kind of open, these things can, what'd you say? They have easier access to you.
Well, the thing is, because I raised your awareness and consciousness and you came in contact, I mean, literally with the spirit realm with inside you, it opens up you to a higher consciousness as well as a connection. This is something I've known for a long time in my life. When I've done seances, other people have had this now happen to them. Some of my best friends that never had experiences, after having experience with me, they start to have experiences. Same thing happened with Gail Porter doing Dead Famous. After some of the things that occurred with me and me putting my hand on her, after that, she was able to start hearing the voices and seeing spirits too, which we had to kind of keep quiet the remaining of the season.
Right.
But this is something that occurs no different than someone that has a near-death experience, goes the other side and comes back, now has a high sense of intuition, dreams that come true, premonitions, that type of stuff. Because you are now connecting with your higher self and the higher part of you that is all-knowing. So that fragment of that is now inside you that is more aware, more perceptive to these things. So you're going to have more experiences.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, and it's funny because as an investigator, I've watched shows and I'm like, come on, all of a sudden the lead investigator is suddenly more sensitive. You know, that seems convenient. But working in this, there's times when Cindy and I will walk into a place and I'll say, what are you picking up on? She looks at me and she goes, what are you picking up on? And I'll look at her and I'm like, why do you ask? She goes, because I know you're sensing something. Just talk about it. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not the sensitive. She goes, Dave, you're very sensitive. Stop fighting it. You know, and she's trying to teach me to walk into this light as well and do this. Not that I'm fully mediumistic in any way, shape, or form, but I certainly can sense different things going into it. But for people, again, we take what we do very seriously. We do a lot of prayer. We do a lot of closing ceremonies. Everybody wants to know, did I do anything? Did Chris do anything to help me? And yes, and I do have a photograph. Chris did help me afterwards try to exorcise the demon from me. So
it was, I had to wrestle it just like a rancher.
That's right. For those of you watching the video, you got to see it. For those of you only listening to the podcast, shame on you. What I will do is I'm going to put up a picture. I took pictures of each one of the slips of paper that were somewhat legible for my automatic writing. So I'm going to put them up. If you go to darknessradio.com, go to the news tab, you'll see today's date, and underneath will be thumbnails of the pictures. You can click on them to see an enlarged version. I'll put that picture up too, just so you can see the picture of so for those of you watching, again, there it is, Chris Fleming wrestling the demon out of me. We had, you know, you have this instance where we're communicating. We did the prayers. We did this kind of clearing. We invited Eliza and her two children in. We invited spirits into this circle with us that we created to help them cross over. I don't know necessarily if they crossed over, but my hope is that those fragments, I don't even know that necessarily what we're dealing with are full.
Correct. Fragments of consciousness. Yeah.
Right.
Part
they're,
of
they're,
them.
Yeah. Right. They're the part of them that remains that it's tortured. We just want to try to help the soul reconnect and put it back together. So that's kind of what we focus on doing. You could feel a difference in that house to me. You could feel lighter sense and
absolutely. There's Sam, a lifting. You guys talk about that. I'll be right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sam, talk to me about that. This is your family.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
Well, what happened, so when Chris and I were together, so Chris, I was picking up on Chris's abilities as well. So when he's right, like, well, I did stuff during this investigation that I have never done before. So I've never crossed spirits before, and that's something that Chris has done before. And so we basically created these two beams of light, and by connecting together spiritually, we had the two beams of light going up. So what was happening are the spirits, including my family members, were lining up behind me, and I was pushing them through to the light. And there was an angel that came from above, the angel with golden hair, that I saw. I mean, I saw the angel. That's why I'm crying, like, you know, at the table, because it was so beautiful, what I was seeing. So that part wasn't the pain part. That was the beauty part. And so the angel was coming down, and people ask me, did Eliza cross? I will say that it was a frenzy of spirits when the doors opened and we confronted the dark energy that's in the house. It was almost like we pushed it to the side and we kind of binded it so we can let the spirits go through. And it was like they were coming like all over the place. It wasn't just the house. It was the neighborhood. And I would say up to 60 spirits that were coming through. And we were asked, Chris asked, like, you know, how many spirits are crossing? And it was like 60. And we're like, what? 60 spirits. But as a clairvoyant, I could see what was going on. And it was behind me while we're going through. And I know that what I remember, Dave, that affects me on a deep level is seeing Eliza. And she was holding up her children like to go to the light. So she was lifting them up. And they did that beautifully in the recreation. But I don't know if she crossed. And she was almost like sacrificing her opportunity to cross to the light to save her children. And that, to me, is the most beautiful thing I can imagine.
Yeah, you have to wonder, does she fear retribution? Does she fear judgment for what happened? You know, I could see sending your children to the light and just staying out of fear for what that means for your eternal soul. Are you even welcome there, or do you feel worthy to go there?
I think that's what was going on. She felt, I think, guilt. And I think that happened. That was the case for other family members as well. Like, they weren't ready to cross yet, but the ones that could cross, like the children, were there, and Eliza and Lizzie was there with us too. Like when we said, you know, is Lizzie here? And I'm like, yes, she's here. She was watching. And there was a point before the seance that I wanted to point out that Chris and I were sitting at the table beforehand, and Lizzie kind of projected into the room, and there was like this black blob of energy, like ectoplasm, that was hovering above the bed.
The darkness.
Yeah, the darkness. And so Lizzie was in the room, or Lizbeth, as she likes to be called, almost a little edgy, you know, a little bit kind of like, why did you call me here? But she participated in the crossing with Eliza and with other family members. And when they had that beautiful image of the family, the portraits of the family coming through, that's what I saw. I saw my family fighting for other family members. And it was just a wonderful thing.
You'll notice, folks, that we refer to her as Lizzie when we were in the house, because I believe that was the part, the fragment of who we were communicating with. When we went to Maplecroft, we referred to her as Lizbeth. Because I believe that's who she was at that point. The fragment that stays behind at the Lizzie Borden bed and breakfast is that dark fragment of this tortured soul. I hope that we were able to find peace for her in forgiveness and understanding that. What is hell? You know, what is heaven? If there is a hell, it's the torment of hearing your name besmirched for 140 years and have people casting aspersions and making lies and telling stories that she has to have been living eternally through hell with just the concept of who she is. If she was truly innocent, I hope she's not here. I hope that there's a part of her. And if the part that is here, I hope it's just that part that broke when she confronted these murders, and that's all that's there, not the whole being of who she is. I hope that is what's at rest at Maplecroft. And we didn't try to cross Lizbeth over in Maplecroft because we believe that's where she wants to be. But we tried to help any spirits that are lost there. And we said, just bind this place and protect the spirits within it. And that was that wasn't to keep them there. It wasn't to trap them there. It was just to keep them safe from other things coming in to influence them.
I will say that we were so respectful to my cousin Lizzie and Lizbeth. And I agree with you, Dave. Like there was a splinter Lizzie at the murder house. So there's Lizzie and there's Lizbeth. And it's kind of hard to explain that in a TV show. But the splinter self is what I believe what took you over when you were channeling No More Lies. Mm-hmm. I believe that was the splinter self. I mean, Chris, what do you think? Like the idea of a splinter self?
Well, the one thing we've learned about is there are multiple timelines and alternate realities, which, you know, would be a whole nother conversation, is when we make a choice or purpose, we go off down that path. But the other option, the other decision branches off into an alternate timeline. So we have our soul within this life has multiple experiences, even though we're only conscious right now of one. So you have these fragments that go off and have these other multitude of experiences. So there is a part of her that this murder never happened per se. But regarding being at that house, there is that conscious trauma from it happening and living that life afterwards that is there. There's belief that our soul does cross over, but it leaves some of those fragments here. You know, we could debate that for a long period of time. The question is that we were having present contact, intelligent communication back and forth with this personality. So that tells me that spirit is there. Can it be in multiple places at the same time? You know, absolutely. But for us, it doesn't matter. It's like that fragment, that part of Lizzie is what we wanted to communicate with and try to help.
And help we did, I think. Yeah. You know, I felt
you could feel it.
Yeah, a pressure release off of
it
me.
It was amazing.
Yeah. So there was something really profound that occurred. Luann was not able to join us today. You guys came in last minute. I had another guest that we were scheduled to be with and couldn't be here. So I appreciate you guys joining me for this revisiting of The Curse of Lizzie Borden. Again, folks, just so you know, you can find the program on Discovery Plus, The Curse of Lizzie Borden, Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK. That's Discovery Plus and Discovery Plus UK with Sam Beltrusis, me, Dave Schrader, Luann Jolly, Chris Fleming. And I don't know if it's going to be visiting Travel TV. I'm hoping maybe in October, maybe during Ghosttober, it'll air on TV and you'll, if you haven't had a chance to see it. But again, folks, I can't suggest it enough. Right now, first of all, for seven-day free trial, go watch the 7-day free trial, watch The Curse of Lizzie Borden, watch the two seasons of The Holzer Files, and then see all the great programming that's underneath that umbrella of paranormal, of, you know, there's cooking, there's paranormal, there's travel, there's true crime. It is such a huge corporate umbrella with Discovery that you might find that all of the shows you watch on cable are right there underneath Discovery Plus umbrella. And you could get it. $7 is commercial free. $5, you get them with commercials. But then you could take that along and it might save you. Everybody that's reaching out to me says, I was so reticent to hold off on that. I didn't want to spend one more $5 bill a month. And now that they've done it, they've canceled cable because they realized all the shows they watch are on Discovery Plus anyway. So just take that into consideration. Guys, as we're wrapping up this episode, Sam, obviously this is your family. This is something you take very seriously. It's not just a lark for a TV show. What is the big takeaway for you from the Curse of Lizzie Borden documentary?
I just think that this is the beginning of something big, Dave, for me. I think that this was the first layer, and we removed that first layer, but there's so much pain and so much darkness in my family lineage. And I think I was able to do that with your help and with Chris's help and with Luann's help. And so to me, this is the beginning. And I also think that, you know, also too, that we didn't really talk about, there was retaliation as well. So I did, after the seance and after we went home, I was attacked by the darkness a few weeks later, and Chris worked with me through that, and we actually ended up getting it removed by a shaman. So
can you talk a little bit about that? When you say attack, let people know what you were going through, would you?
Yeah, so we talked about Eliza you know, crossing over the children. There was one of the children that didn't cross, and it was the little boy Holder who I apparently stayed with me. So the entity was going after me to get the boy. It wanted the boy, and I was protecting the boy. And so I was in bed. I woke up, and I had this hand around my mouth with long fingernails. And I just remember seeing blackness. But the reason why I woke up was because I heard a voice say, "Sam, wake up! Sam, wake up!" And it sounded like Chris Fleming, you know. I was like, is that Chris? And this, like, people say that it was my spirit guides, like, wake up, because I was in danger. So I wake up and I immediately put what I call a crystal shield of protection, and I kind of like banished the entity. And then it went to my friend, Joni, who's my co-host on my radio show, Paranormal Rewind, and she had it removed. So yeah, so it was a horrible attack. It attacked me while I was asleep, which is when you're most vulnerable.
So for people that want to keep up with you, the different projects in your podcast, they can check you out at sambeltrusis.com. And again, we'll have a link up for Sam on today's program guide, sambeltrusis.com. And that way you can keep up, and you've got a lot of cool stuff. Is there anything else you can tell us about TV wise that's coming out?
Yeah. So because of this project, it kind of opened up a whole slew of opportunities for me. So I'm going to be on several shows and a documentary, which I can't give details about, but I'm also working as a producer on the TV show called A Haunting. And I was on A Haunting, the 100th episode, and talking about an attachment that nearly killed me, and being able to be on the other side of the camera and to have these stories be told in a very powerful way has the gift of storytelling, and also doing it with accuracy and respect, is something that I love doing. So yeah, I'm now a producer on the TV show of A Haunting, and that's coming out on Discovery Plus season 11. So look for that.
Awesome. Congratulations, Sam. It's always a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you so much for coming on and spending some time with us today on the program.
Thank you so much.
It's always great. Chris Fleming, what's your takeaway from doing this documentary? You're getting a chance to revisit a place that really impacted you 10 years ago.
Well, the interesting thing was obviously to come in contact with Lizzie again and some of the other spirits that were there. The biggest thing for me too, which on a side note, was I had been researching and investigating this darkness this consciousness that exists within another realm that we've called the devil, Satan, all these other things. And its presence was there, which is ironic. And during that seance, when we had the device, I said, "What is this darkness?" And it said, "Pure evil." And that is exactly what it was in this vision that I had 2 years ago. So for me, it was to greater understand this other realm of where this type of thing comes from. You know, and the responses we had coming back and forth were answering that for me on a personal note. Ironically, it was something that was also there at the Borden house that had caused this over a period of time through generations and affected the populace of that area, which it also does all over the world. So now we have this, you know, you talk about the tree of life, it's here and it branches out. Well, you have this darkness too. It's here and it branches out. And there's all this hierarchy. Now I know exactly where the source is of what is all evil.
What are you working on? How can people keep up with you? And are you still doing readings? Can people get a personal reading?
Yeah, I actually have a client here right now. I'm going to be doing a reading. They just showed up. So I do readings throughout the week. You can go just Google Genbook, G-E-N-B-O-O-K, Chris Fleming, and it'll be like the first two links that pop up. I'm going to be redoing the website. I'm going to be this week at the Massachusetts Paracon with Sam. I'll be flying Friday, coming back Monday, so I'll be there this weekend. And then I've got October 2nd, I'll be investigating the Cheney Mansion for Paranormal Access event with Brian Murray and Rachel Stratton from the Ghost Hunters A&E. So I'm excited about that event, October 2nd. But besides that, I got to get back on track doing my own podcast, 5 months behind. So I got to crank those out over the next 2 weeks.
But people can find your podcast and listen to all the great years of background. What's it? Spirit Talk with Chris Fleming, right?
Correct. Yeah. Spirit Talk. You can find it on iTunes, on YouTube, and my website, ChristopherFleming.com, which will get a new facelift within the next 2 months.
Excellent. We've got the web link up there for you for ChristopherFleming.com. You can find that. Chris, this was a real treat to get a chance to work with you on screen. I don't think this is the last time they're going to see you and I doing things together. So I'm looking forward to our next adventure, and I hope that it's sooner rather than later. And folks, if you want to see us back together, just keep tagging Discovery and Discovery Plus, Discovery Plus UK. Let them know that you want to see the two of us work together again. Right. And perhaps even Sam Beltrusis, we can bring the Holy Trinity back out and the weird Trinity back out and get a chance to investigate other locations and other stories, because there's already some that have presented themselves. We're hoping we'll be able to revisit. Chris, take care, buddy. It's great talking
to you. You too. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
All right. That's it for this week, folks. I hope that you enjoyed the program, and thank you for tuning in and spending some time here with us. We pre-recorded this, so I'm sorry I wasn't able to bring in regular questions during this program, but thank you all for helping me realize my dreams and to celebrate the paranormal, the strange, and the supernatural, and take me along in that journey. The words that you have shared on social media about watching the programs and supporting them means more to me than you could ever know. And the networks are taking notice, because there was such beauty and positivity regarding The Curse of Lizzie Borden and the work that we did. So thank you all very much for being a part of that with me. And I don't take it lightly that you involved me on your quest for knowledge and information with Darkness Radio, Holzer Files, and any of the new projects that I'm working on. So thank you very much. Be safe, be kind to one another, and we'll see you again here next week on the best in paranormal talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.